780 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbite. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips and the peas. It is Sunday, the 18th of November, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton. I didn't know if you guys had anybody else in there. I wasn't sure what was going on.
We got the mighty Dan Cole in here. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 7 minutes after the hour, and we are...
Ton of stuff.
We're doing a ton of stuff today. We've got a couple of interesting things going on. We've got guests phoning in for the second hour. We'll be talking about a new product that debuted here in Rochester, New York, hub of civilization in the Western world. We're going to perform a science experiment starting very shortly. Dan was kind enough to bring in all the paraphernalia to do that with. And
encourage folks to, so they can watch us, go to the Wham Cam so you can, actually see us do this experiment and kind of join in on the fun.
Yeah, we'll be doing that in just a few minutes. This is not plugged in anywhere.
The one key thing that we should talk about, Nick, I know kind of getting stuff ready here, is for all you folks, the Soundbites website is down.
Yeah, that's my first piece of news here. What's going on is this. A year ago, Frontier was kind enough to give us space in their world-class data center. They want it back now, but that's a whole different story. Anyway, we put a nice server in there, brand-new server, lots of horsepower, lots of hard disk space, lots of RAM. A few days ago, suddenly, we didn't have a server anymore. We had a random collection of circuit boards whose hard drives had apparently been going south for a very, very long time. I'd say, months and months ago. Looking back at all my carefully kept backups, they're mostly all crap. Soundbites, Ask Nick.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah, it is now. Soundbites. Ask Nick, nickf.com, a couple of other sites, all pretty much gone or massively scrambled. Not sure what we're going to do about it right now. We will keep you informed. Our first job is to get the server somewhere we can diagnose it.
Yeah, if you can get it, I can do some diagnostics.
Yeah, and try to figure out what we can salvage. I can move the sites back to Jerry. God bless Jerry Seward.
He's our savior. He's a saint
and our savior, and I need to call him about this. I knew I shouldn't have, a year ago when Frontier said, let's move these things over, I had a really bad feeling about it, but I did it anyway because I'm an idiot.
No, you were trying to be gracious because they gave us the space.
They were very nice to do all of that.
And we were doing a lot of stuff with Frontier, which we still want to do. I mean, but I mean, it was just circumstance.
Right.
It was a great opportunity.
Right.
And just things change.
But until we can actually get into the data center to get the machine back, the sites are all going to be down. And then it's going to take us a while, hopefully, to get them back up as they were. You know, Frontier was kind enough to give us the space. I felt using it would be polite. I did do the daily backups. I have all the website pages, of course, but all the databases are down. For Soundbites, that means the forums, which, frankly, there's enough stuff in the forum that's so grotesquely old that... That's not as big a deal, but on AskNick, it's my entire membership database, so that's a very bad thing. I'm hoping I can recover all of that. I can recreate it, but I'd rather recover it than recreate it.
And all the archives. I've only got it a couple months back because they were on the server and they were being backed up.
I didn't think
a third backup was needed. I was wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe Jerry still got some of our stuff.
Well, I've got everything up to this year on a CD somewhere.
Are we talking about the audio files of the show? I have everything back to Father's Day.
Oh, excellent. That should be much of it, if not all of it.
June, is it?
June 12th.
So we're missing January through June.
Yeah, we got some of that. I'll figure it out. I just haven't done it. I'm not entirely... and here's the thing. The daily backups actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
The files were all zipped up into a directory automatically. I downloaded them every day. For the first 3 or 4 months, I checked them every day to make sure they were good. And then I just stopped checking them because it was just, one more thing on my plate and I didn't do it.
It's Frontier's data center,
Right.
Yeah, but
it was our hardware. Yeah. So I was backing them up, but the backups have been bad for much of the last year. So learn from my mistake. Don't just back up. Check your backups. We'll get the system running as quickly as we can. I feel terrible about this, but we'll figure out what to do and when we can do it, and we'll make it happen. But right now, there is no sound bites. There's no Ask Nick. Security Tango is still up, but because ironically, that's one of the sites that Frontier wanted us to advertise on, and they did, but that's one of the sites I didn't move over, and I don't know why, but I didn't, and so there you are with that. But that's where we stand with all of that. That's why the website is down.
Now, will
the
request for the Security Tango still come through, or is that server down?
No, that's there. Security Tango is up.
All right, so any emails, net requests?
No, emails to soundbites.org are going to bounce because there's no soundbites.org.
We're done with all of that. I got to call Jerry and Gabe this afternoon and try to move the at least the mail record somewhere else, have it point somewhere else. But see, Ask Nick is down, Soundbites is down, they're all down. I just feel really terrible about this. I mean, this is what I do for a living, and normally things get backed up fast and easy.
But the thing that is, though, it's in a spot where we just can't walk in and just say, oh, here we are, let's grab
the
machine and go.
That's the big problem. Because they finished the year, they cut off our access to it. Now I'm trying to get a hold of the people that at least let us get the machine out of there.
Yeah.
So that they were nice. I mean, they were nice enough that it's still running. They didn't cut the network connection, but they did cut our access to the data center. So I'm trying to get that reinstated long enough for us to get the hardware out of there so we can diagnose it and fix it. Had it been, you know, had things been otherwise, we could have just bought a new hard drive, shoved it in there, and done, finished. Mm-hmm. That would have fixed it, but that's not the way it happened. So it's a confluence of circumstances that just ended up screwing us, as you might say. Before we go to the phones, I do want to remind everybody that there is a contest going on right now. If you go to winanmri.com, winanmri.com, there's a contest to win an MRI. No, you don't win an MRI, but a hospital wins an MRI. And the MRI machine, exactly right. And, of course, we're all pulling for Lockport Memorial Hospital, 80,000 people who need an MRI machine. So if you go there, you can vote once a day through the end of the year, and it would be a lovely thing for you to do to help the folks at the Lockport Memorial Hospital by voting for their video.
The one thing I forgot
video.
About that hospital?
Yeah?
Both my daughters were born there.
There you go.
Both of my daughters were born out at Lockport Hospital.
Nice.
Yeah. After you had mentioned it, I thought, wait a minute, why does that sound so familiar? Oh, yeah, I've been there a few times.
There you go. All right, coming up, I've spent the entire first segment apologizing for my horrible skills as a systems administrator. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Dan Cole, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 14 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Okay, things are just getting weird. For those of you who would like to join the Soundbites chat, it, of course, was on nickf.com, and that is also down. I have opened a channel on IRC, on FNET, E-F-N-E-T, FNET, Octothorpe Soundbites, or as you probably pronounce it, Pound Soundbites. So if anybody wants to join in the chat, that's where it's going to be.
FNET.com?
FNET. No, if you open up an IRC client and go down the list, you'll find FNET as one of the servers.
All right, so no web interface.
No. Where am I going to put it? I got two suggestions of where I can put it.
There are IRC web clients.
There are, but I don't have anywhere to put the IRC web client. Israeli researchers who have reverse engineered a critical component of Windows encryption technology say attackers could exploit the flaws to decipher secured information. Microsoft has downplayed the threat. Basically, what they've done is they've cracked the algorithm used by Windows' pseudo-random number generator. They also spelled out vulnerabilities in cryptgenrandom function, which calls that. Windows and its applications use the pseudo-random number generator to create random encryption keys, which are in turn used to encrypt files and email messages, and by the SSL secure socket layer protocol. And SSL secures virtually every important internet data transmission, including information from customers to online retailers and from bank customers to their online accounts. It's pretty much everywhere. What they've done is they've created a deal that lets the under Windows, the pseudo-random number generator never really resets. So if you know the state of the generator now, which this function can figure out, you will immediately know what it's been like in the past and what it will be like in the future. Now, that is not true on Linux systems. Linux uses not only a different random number generator, but the randomness is refreshed much, much, much more often. So, in fact, every time. So under Linux, this is not a vulnerability. Under Windows, it's a horrible, horrible hole in their system. So if you're using Windows and going to secure websites, you may not, in fact, be secure at all. Microsoft says, we have found there is no security vulnerability because administrators by design can access all files and resources on a system. This does not represent inappropriate disclosure of information. That's not quite true, of course, because once you have a way to do remote code execution, you can grab the state of the generator. Any hacker who knows the operating system could grab the generator state and figure out what's going on. So if you're someone who uses SSL, don't use it under Windows. Don't go to secure websites under Windows. Don't do any of that stuff because it's no longer secure. And Microsoft doesn't think it's a problem, so they're not going to fix it. Let's go to our first call. Our first caller is Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
I have a Dell computer, or excuse me, HP, running Windows XP on it, and the mouse is frozen. There isn't any power to the keyboard. I've tried different keyboards and different mice, and the mouse is just frozen on the screen.
Now, is this USB, or is it standard PS2 connector?
It's not a USB.
There's the little round PS2. Yeah. Is the clock still keeping time in the bottom right corner?
Well, it's timed out now, so I'm just at my login window, so I don't have a clock.
Trying to determine whether it's the keyboard frozen up or the computer.
Saver,
So the computer was still running even though the keyboard and mouse weren't working?
Right. Now, can you get it into safe mode and see if they work?
No.
When the machine is booting up, will it allow you to hit F8?
No, my keyboard and mouse are totally
And you know they're plugged in tight.
They are definitely plugged in tight.
Have you tried a different keyboard and mouse?
I've tried a different keyboard and
then you might have blown the
Picofarad.
Pico fuse.
A Pico fuse.
Yeah, there's a little fuse on there. It's called a Pico fuse.
Basically, it's the port the keyboard plugs into has blown, or the controller that runs those ports. Try a USB keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
And see if they work. That would be a different
That
port
would be
to
the
plug
cheaper
into.
Way to go. I mean, because otherwise, you're looking to. Matter of fact, here's the thing. You can get adapters to take your current keyboard and mouse and convert them from PS2 to USB. That would be the cheaper way to go. You might spend $10 buying the two adapters, and they literally go on the keyboard and mouse, and they'll plug into a USB port and see if they work that way.
Okay.
All right?
Great, thanks, guys.
Now, but Joanne, be very careful. There are two types of converters. One from the PS2 to USB. That's not what you want.
You want to go
PS2. You want to go to the one from USB.
No, PS2 to USB.
Adapting a PS2 keyboard to a USB port.
Right, you want to make sure that that it plugs into the USB port,
right,
and that the other end is where you can plug in your keyboard.
Yeah, it's a male USB and a female PS2.
Mm-hmm.
Okie doke.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Nick, what was that IRC channel?
It's on EFNet, and it's # soundbites, all one word. That's bytes with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you.
There is a web interface at chat.efnet.org. And you can use the IRC channels over our web.
Oh, there you go.
So that's why I'm trying to log in now and see if I'm
there. There you are.
I'm in. Okay.
You're in.
So chat.efinet.org and use the channel #soundbites.
There you go. Maybe we'll get some folks into the chat so that they can continue to talk.
Who's SQL Acid?
I don't know. We have SQL Acid. Archandra's in and Steve is in. So that's all good. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill. From Livonia, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi. I'm working on my kid's computer. I've been trying to upgrade the memory from there's three slots. They have two half gig memories.
Mm-hmm.
That memory is a PC 2100 DDR266.
Okay.
I went into a local store and they said, well, we don't have exactly that, but have we got a deal for you? They gave me a PC 3200. And it's a DDR, and then it can downgrade from 400 to 333 to 266. When I put the memory in, the physical memory is read at 1.5 gigabytes. the available physical memory is still at 1 gigabyte.
What operating system are you running?
I'm operating XP.
Which version?
Home.
So you've got two 512 sticks in there.
Yes.
And what size are you trying to put in?
The one I'm trying to go is a 512 as well.
The 3 512s.
Correct.
And there are issues with some of the older XPs. If you Service Pack 1, and the motherboard may not be able to address that much memory.
Well, it might be able to, but it also might be a thing of it is paired, because he's going
paired memories.
Yeah, the pair.
Well, if there's only three slots, you can't pair them.
Right, but the other thing is though, if he hasn't flashed the BIOS, it might not be able to automatically step down from the faster memory. That's why it's not seeing that faster memory because it's a 400.
Yes.
Yeah.
It also has the thing. The display says it also. The memory pack says that the DDR400, D33, and 266.
Right.
Is there a way to force it to step down?
In your BIOS, typically. Most of the time, in the typical BIOS, you can't change the setting of the memory speed. It only uses what it can.
Yeah, auto-senses.
Auto-senses it, yeah. You might want to try one chip at a time and see if that works.
To see if it's compatible.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, God, I hate that. I know I'm going to break this. give me enough time. I'll
get there.
It's not as bad as the older ones. You used to break those clips off so easy.
Well, the one before that, even.
Old computer. This is over 5 years old.
Yeah. Well, that may be the problem then. The motherboard may not be able to address that much memory.
Or that speed, step down in speed.
I went to this computer site, looked it up, and it said it could be upgraded to 1.5 gig. But
is it usable? So you have upgraded it to 1.5 gig, but it can only use 1 gig of it.
How would it be able to find if it...
Yeah, it should still register 1.5 gig.
He said
but
it
what
did.
I'm saying, though...
He said installed memory is 1.5, available is 1.0. So there may be something on the motherboard. You may need to update the BIOS, too.
Yeah.
But try one chip at a time and see if that works.
We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright. We have Dan Cole, who's going to perform an experiment when we come back. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we have Dan Cole with us. And at 31 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. For those of you who've been confused, it's chat.efnet.com or org?
Org.
Org. Chat.efnet.org. Chat.efnet.org. And then the channel you want to join is #soundbites. #soundbites.
That's Shift 3.
Shift 3 on your keyboard. Shift 3 on your keyboard. Here at Soundbites. All righty. All right, before we go a whole lot farther, there's a video up on the web that's just hysterically funny. This guy takes an onion, soaks it in Gatorade for half an hour, and then plugs his iPod into it. And it works. And Dan has brought in all the necessary accoutrement, and I have brought in a very... very dead iPod. I actually got the error message yesterday that says, I'm sorry, there's not even enough battery for me to do anything. I'm going away now. Bye-bye. And Dan is now...
You may want to slide this way a few feet, Dan, so the webcam can get you.
Yeah, we want the webcam to be able to pick this up. Dan's got the onion. He's drying it off now.
It has to be a white onion. They were pretty specific about that.
It is a white onion. There's the iPod, and then you'll know.
Right now, we can just see the top of Dan's head.
I brought in an extender for my USB, and Dan's just get it in there, give it a good push. Dan, use some muscle, Dan.
It may take a few moments, especially if it's really dead.
Still dark. So
now,
not working.
Those of us that are sort of old probably remember doing potato batteries and lighting up little tiny light bulbs with potato batteries, and
right. They even sell those now at ThinkGeek.
Yeah.
The studio tube's got to warm up. While that's going on, we'll go back and take another call. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Victor, what's your question?
In today's paper, there's a sale on blank DVDs, Sony, TDK, and Philips. My question is there any quality differences in those?
Yes. Next question. The big question is, which brand works with your drive?
I bought Sony, and they work fine. The other ones were on sale also.
Yeah. Most of the discs are pretty similar. Where you can run into problems are the, like the spindle of 100 free after rebate. They can be too cheap, and the plastic is too thin, the coatings are too thin.
I wouldn't rely on them for my long term.
Right. Long term, you want to use the Kodak archival preservation discs. Yeah, the gold discs. In general, most of the brands are pretty much the same and pretty reliable. We have seen some interesting differences in what brands work with what drives. And sometimes a brand will work great on your drive, and you give a disc to someone, and they can't read it on their drive, which is always annoying.
Where do you get these Kodak Gold? I've never heard of them.
Most of the Wegmans in town that have photo developer booths inside, and there's a distributor on Atlantic Avenue. Let me see if I can find their name offhand. KMPmedia.com is Kodak Media Products' website, and they have their information about the Kodak Gold. We actually had Steve Mizell, the CEO of KMP Media, in town. On the show a few weeks ago, they use a high quality 24 karat gold. They use a very high quality dye. They use a good thick plastic layers in the middle just to make sure everything works well. And I'm trying to stall for time until I find this. PDI Supply at PDISupply.com is also a supplier in town, but they have them in the local Wegmans that have the photo developer booths.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I'm fascinated to be able to say that apparently it is indeed working. If you look at the cam now, you can see a very tiny picture. Maybe you can move a little closer to the camera. Kristen, and
a little tiny iPod and a little tiny camera.
Yeah, exactly. It's blowing up now even as we speak. But it apparently is in fact working. He's got it working. He's moving it around. We're actually powering the iPod out of an onion. I find this.
Yep.
Extremely amusing.
Well, USB only provides like 5 volts of power at, yep, I forget how many milliamps, so it doesn't need to be that much.
Hold the onion up a little
current.
Closer to the, yeah, there you go. Oh, that's funny. That's really funny. We're actually running the iPod at this point off of an onion. This is hysterically funny. I'm very amused. I'm very, very amused. All right.
Science teachers everywhere are clapping. Make science fun.
Make science fun. Our next caller is Jerry from Walkett, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I have a question regarding the ability to connect an HP LaserJet parallel cable to a laptop that does not have a parallel port. Is there a connection that can be made?
Several Kingston.
Well, several companies make parallel to USB adapters, but I found they barely work. What HP makes is a parallel to Ethernet adapter, HP JetDirect boxes, and it puts a parallel printer on your Ethernet, which you can then connect to a network or any printer.
Well, there's been a number of, because a lot of new motherboards are coming without the parallel ports. Check into Kingston.
Okay.
Kingston was making an adapter to take you from a parallel port to a USB. Because like I say, more and more motherboards nowadays don't have parallel ports on because most of the printers out there are now all gone to USB.
We've found that it's mostly dependent on the brand of printer it is, and each printer manufacturer makes their own parallel to USB or parallel to Ethernet adapter.
Okay.
But most of the companies aren't bothering to make them anymore. Parallel's been dead for 10 years, and it's slowly figuring that out.
My HP printer is chugging along.
Yep. That's been the problem. And on the other side of that coin, you can buy a new laser printer for $99. If it's going to cost you $50 to get an adapter.
If you go to Cables to Go, I just did a quick Google search on parallel to USB, and it brings up a bunch of different sites that you can look at. Kingspan is one. Like I say, cables2go.com.
Cables2go. Okay.
Yeah, check those out. Like I say, it's simple Google search.
Yes, I have one other question regarding discs. There are a number of different types of discs on the market. CDR, DVD-R, DVD-R,
RW, and then there's Plus R and Plus RDL. Yep.
What is the difference between all of those?
They are functionally different in their manufacture and their capacity. In general, CDs have a capacity of 700 megs, Single-layer DVDs have a capacity of 4,000 megs. Dual-layer DVDs have...
Gig.
Gigs, thank you. 700 megs, right, 700 megs on a CD, 4,000 megs on a single-layer DVD, 8,000 megs or 8 gigs on a dual-layer DVD. And now we're getting HD DVD is 25 gigs and Blu-ray DVD is 50 gigs.
And the other thing that you were talking about, R's and RWs. R's are read, write once, whereas RWs are read, write multiple times.
Yeah,
you can
erase,
burn to it, erase it, and rewrite.
And write to it again. The RWs are more expensive, so most people generally don't bother. They just burn it again on an R disk. Now, all of that has to match the drive you have. So if you only have a CDR drive, you cannot use a CDRW disk.
Got it.
So
okay.
It depends on your drives. Now, Apple calls theirs super drives because it does virtually all of the formats. So you have to check the specifications of your drive to see what capabilities it has.
Very good. I thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you. You too. Do we have time for another caller? No, we don't. Look it up. No, clearly we don't because here comes the music. All right. We're going to have... Has the... Thing stopped. Stopped charging. We're gonna try to do more of that. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Dan Cole, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and pretty much anybody who wanders into the studio. It's 40 minutes after the hour on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, hello. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right. If you're a GeoCities user, be very careful. Storm, a botnet building Trojan horse, has come up with another twist to dupe users into infecting their PCs with malware. Longtime clients of the Russian Business Network, a notorious hacker and malware hosting network that mysteriously vanished last week after shifting operations from St. Petersburg, Russia to Shanghai, are involved in the attack, according to Paul Ferguson, who's the network architect at Trend Micro. Yesterday, Trend watched as existing bots controlled by Storm were seeded with new spam templates that included links to sites on GeoCities, the free web hosting service owned by Yahoo. Yesterday, Storm kicked off the new attacks. This has developed into a full-fledged attack vector, according to Trend. The GeoCities sites are infected with malicious JavaScript code that redirects the users' browsers to secondary URLs hosted in Turkey. The Turkish URLs, meanwhile, try to persuade users to download a new codec that's supposedly necessary to view the images on the GeoCities sites. According to Trend Micro's analysis, the bogus codec, which claims to be for the 360-degree IPIX format, is actually an identity and information-stealing piece of malware. Fake codecs have become the latest choice of hackers, with several notable attacks recently relying on users' naivete about what a codec is, why it might be necessary, and why they can be untrustworthy. So, for example, last week, there was a MySpace hack that included R&B singer Alicia Keys that touted phony codecs. So, a codec is the thing that lets you view or listen to certain formats of music or video. So, if you get a box that says you need to click here to download this codec, just ignore it. Close it. It's a trap. Do not do it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. As I was listening as I was driving here on a hands-free headset, I could only think that Nick is easily amused based on his comments. But
I am easily amused.
The question I have is for Dave. A couple weeks ago, he was saying that he had been looking at a new free anti-spyware software. I think it's called Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah.
And you've been had any further experience with it?
So far, I'm liking what I see.
Okay.
It's catching a lot of stuff. Like I said, it's an ongoing battle right now with, the viruses aren't as bad as they used to be. I mean, like I was saying just last week, weekly, we'd always say, oh, you got to protect against this virus and that virus. And, they were bringing down networks and everything else. Well, they've sort of shifted away from that. And what these kiddies with no lives are doing now is literally doing Trojans and spyware. And what they're trying to do is steal your information because that's profitable. So these, viruses are dropped off, but the malicious spyware and Trojans are constantly playing leapfrog now. So, having more than just the two tools that we recommend, the Adware and the SpyBot, I found this super anti-spyware, just to be another great tool that you can try it out, see if you like it. And then again, as we do with any shareware program, recommend, you know, if you find it useful in that, support them and pay it. Because if it's helping you keep your machine safe and clean and running better and faster, go for it, folks. It's a small price to pay than, you know, having it crawl to your knees and then having to bring it to my shop and have to have it cleaned out. And, you know, it could take hours. So, yeah, but going back to your original question, it is a great package. Try it out and let us know what you think. Okay, Andy?
I took a leap of faith when you first mentioned it and decided to try it. And what I found is that when I run it, then I'll go back and do the usual security tango.
Mm-hmm.
And after I've run that, then I bought Adware, don't seem to find anything.
Yeah, because like I say, the super anti-spyware seems to be combining both of them very well. It's doing deep searches, especially if you do a complete scan, and it'll go through both. So that's why I say it doesn't hurt to run the other two just to be reassured that there's nothing hiding in your machine.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Dan Cole, wherever he went, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 54 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go put your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle on the floor around the rocker, and if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Are you really ready for me?
I don't know. I haven't been ready for anything all day.
You really want me to get at it?
Go for it.
All right.
The way I'm feeling right now, go for it. Rob's the one who knows where the dump button is. He can handle it.
No. I had another one, and I'm sure Steve will appreciate this one, too. I love it when somebody brings their machine in, we get it all cleaned up, and then a few weeks later, they come back and say, well, I didn't have time to do it when I got right home, but I just went and hooked it up, and the thing is all infested and not working again.
Well, usually they don't even say that. It's still broken. Well, it's 3 weeks later. Yeah, well, yes, it was broken since I took it home.
This one gets better. They say, no, I didn't touch it at all. Just hooked it up. And matter of fact, that's why I'm calling you today, because, you know, I just did it yesterday. And bring it back in. Get it back in. We look at it. Gee, 2 weeks ago, one of their kids was on it and going into the internet and going here and doing that. A week and a half ago, they installed this program, that program, this program. And, oh, by the way, the Norton, which was version 2000, which in the original notes we took off, was back on it. And the software that we took off to help keep it clean was gone. But yet they claim they didn't do anything. They just hooked it up, tried to get on there, and it was broken. Wrong, honey.
They might not have, but someone else did.
Exactly. I says, you know, and then you try to be diplomatic. Excuse me, but they used it here and here. No, they couldn't have. I just hooked it up. Excuse me, but I'm telling you, it's all gone. How did the end of it? Oh, I don't know. Maybe you didn't clean it off right. Yes, we did. And it was gone. It was version 2000. And it states right here that we removed it. And we talked to you and let you know that it was gone.
And it probably expired 7 years ago,
you
too.
And the thing that is there's so many logs in there that we can check and tell when folders were created, times that you were on the internet, even the websites that you went to, and if you don't clean them out.
It's always the kid. We had a customer bring a machine in with a broken screen, and they swore it was in the closet for 2 weeks because the kids were bad. So as a punishment, we put the computer in the closet. Well, someone used it and broke the screen in those 2 weeks. Just broke itself while sitting in the closet.
Yeah. No, you know what? Like I say, don't try to snow a snowman.
Don't let your kids snow you. They were using it.
Exactly. You know, if something else happened to it, let me know. Because, again, it all goes back to, you know, if you're upfront with this, it makes it less time that it will take to fix the original problem. So, you know, just, like I say, own up to it, and we'll deal with it from there. I'm not going to sit there and chop your head off.
All right, it's time.
You wound me up.
I wound you up. Now I'm winding you down.
It's going to take a lot of meds this time.
Three of you kids, grab them. Hold them down. We're going to give them a shot. The rest of you, Clean out your mugs, put away your footy jammies, and just go wander off into your lives, because Story Hour with Uncle Dave is done for another week. We're going to give him a little extra sedative this time around and see what he can do. Let me reiterate a little bit before we go here. Let me reiterate what's going on. When we come back, we're going to talk to a representative from a local company called SentrySafe, which has just created a hard drive that will stand up to fire and a whole bunch of other things. Maybe we can get them to give us a few for our server. Let me reiterate that the websites are all down. Ask Nick is down. Soundbites is down. Nick F is down. We've had a massive breakdown of our server, and we're hoping to be able to get at it over the next couple of days and see if we can get it back up and running. I have no idea what's gone, what's still there, whether the databases are all there. I'm really just sick about this. We'll get that up as much as we can.
The errors we're getting is a SQL error that it can't talk to the SQL server. Maybe it's just the SQL
server.
Yeah,
but if you go in,
we're not that lucky?
No, I go in under, I ask this agent, and there are whole directories that have disappeared and whole sections of the system you can't see. Anyway, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to someone from SentrySafe. We're going to have a whole lot more of your calls. So if you're on the line, please be patient. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, maybe Dan Cole. I don't know where he went. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. Join us at EFNET.org, chat.EFNET.org, under the #soundbites, #soundbites. That'll be where we're doing the chat. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. We will be back right after the news, the weather, the sports, all the stuff you really listen to Wham for on the greatest computer show, and that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Well, I'm delighted to say we have a very special guest with us today, calling in on the line. We have Sandra McFarlane. Welcome, Sandra.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. She is the director of marketing. We're not even getting a minion. We're getting the actual director.
Hey, we don't fool around.
No kidding. Of marketing communications for Century Group. And you have an exciting, right here in Rochester, New York, and you have an exciting new product you're here to talk about. Why don't you tell us what it is?
Well, we are very, very excited to talk with you about this product today. And just to give a little bit of background, actually, SentrySafe is a 70-year-old company that, as you mentioned, is based here in Rochester and always on the cutting edge to make sure that we're introducing new products to meet the changing needs of our consumers. We really have been focused on researching and gaining market insight into how people are backing up their data.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have been
This
doing,
is timely.
Exactly. And really, when you stop and think about it, with the wildfires in California, the fact that disaster can strike at any point in time, not only in terms of protecting data from crash and making sure it's backed up, but also making sure that it's protected from disaster, we actually have developed a suite of products that are focused around providing peril protection for people's data. And particularly the product, one of the products that we're very, very proud to introduce is the first and only affordable fire-resistant waterproof hard drive.
Fire-resistant and waterproof.
That's it.
Sandra, one problem, though?
Yes?
We needed it a couple weeks ago because our Soundbites webpage
is
went
down.
South.
Uh-oh.
Well, you know,
and apparently all the backups too.
Yeah, this is one of those deals where we were backing it up and backing it up, but the system was dying and the backups were not good, and I wasn't actually checking the backups. But this is particularly timely because I've noticed a trend in the industry, and I don't know why this is, except there must be some regulatory problems with it. A lot of companies are actually putting fire systems in, fire suppression systems in their data centers.
Which would make sense.
Yeah, because, you know, it's electrical fire, and the thing you really want to do is drop water on it. That makes a lot of sense to me. But what you're saying is your product is not only fireproof, but also waterproof.
Fire resistant and waterproof. That is correct.
That is so cool.
And it is. It really is very, very exciting.
And it's sleek and stylish, too. You don't expect that.
That's exactly right. And, you know, once again, you think of products that, you know, it's very sleek, it's very stylish. It only weighs about 10 to 12 pounds, so it's not that heavy. The other thing that's nice about it, too, is there are those folks that are in dirty or dusty types of environments.
Right.
The finish on it is perfect for that. So it really is a multi-use product. We also have in the suite of products, we also have what we're terming a fire-resistant, waterproof data storage chest. Now, we also know that many people use different things to protect their data. So some people may already own a 2.5-inch hard drive. They may have a flash drive. They may have an MP3 player or a small digital camera. But then they also may be backing up on CDs or DVDs. So we have developed a connected unit where you can put your data storage device, protect it safely inside, lock it up with your CDs and DVDs, and download your data from your computer until your heart's content.
Nice.
So once again, our goal really is to provide a whole suite of these data and document security products to give people flexibility for their needs. And what would a safe company be without actually having a connected safe?
Right.
And this is the world's first and only connected safe. So once again, you put your USB drive or your flash drive inside, connect it. We provide the outside USB connector to your computer. And then once again, it's multi-purpose. We have a CD-DVD tray, as well as the ability to protect and store other valuables inside.
This is great.
Yes.
Well, we've been saying for years, talking about coming up with something, and you folks have fit the bill because, we've been doing this show for over 18 years now, and we've been telling folks, back up, back up, back up. But if they back up and don't have a good place to put it in case of a fire, you know, all their backups aren't going to do them any good.
And
melted pile.
Well, I like the fact that it's water resistant too. So when you're, you know, the other room in your house catches on fire, all the water to put it out still kills your computer.
Right.
And stuff.
What a great product for every home user. Yeah. You apparently now you're saying you can also put papers and other valuables in it as well.
That's exactly right. So once again, it's just a full suite of not only one product, but we actually have four products in the line for different people with different needs. And particularly through the research that we've done, these products are great for anybody, but particularly for small office, home office users, small businesses where their data is their lifeblood.
Yep.
These products are particularly perfect for them. So it's very, very exciting and definitely bringing our company into the forefront of new technology.
Definitely.
And the other thing that we're also very proud of is we're going to be attending our first Consumer Electronics Show in January. And we actually received for the FireSafe waterproof hard drive and for the safe two of the Design and Engineering Innovation Awards, which is very, very prestigious.
Congratulations.
About 856 companies actually submitted, and we received two out of the 32 that were named.
Nice. Congratulations. Sweet. That's great.
And a Rochester-based company.
Yes.
For almost 100 years.
That's exactly right.
That's great. Well, it sounds like a terrific product. Give us the names again.
Once again, it is the FireSafe waterproof hard drive. Comes in 80 gig and 160 gig. It's available on CenturySafe.com, which is our website. The price points for those, the 80 gigabyte hard drive is available for $259.99. The 160 is available for $319.99. And once again, we have the FireSafe waterproof data storage chest that is available for $169.99. And then there is the FireSafe water resistant safe, data storage safe. That's actually available in two sizes. 1.2 is $419.99. And the 2.0 is $519.99. And all products are available on CenturySafe.com.
Well, that's excellent. I may have to get in touch with you offline about a review version to check out and do a review for my folks.
Absolutely. We'd love to do that.
Great.
Yeah. I'll be talking to you and Nick. And
yep.
We'll discuss this further because, like I say, I think this is a great match, you know, the product you are offering, because we've had folks, I mean, I had a client just this past week. I bet you, again, wished that he had had it. Well, not this past week. That laptop.
Yep.
I had a guy who was doing his backups, had him sitting there near his desk as he was diligently backing it up, but the laptop literally caught on fire due to a bad battery.
Ooh.
So the whole room went up in fire. All he had was this pile of plastic melted.
Well, and the other, oh, that's awful. And, you know, it also raises another point about these products. Sentry does stand by its product. And so in that situation, what we would do if they had the hard drive product, either the 80 gig or the 160 gig fire-safe waterproof hard drive,
mm-hmm.
we have a guarantee that is a Sentry guarantee that if that product is in a fire or a water damage situation, because you remember, pipes burst.
Yeah. Right.
Things happen all the time where they are really out of your control within your home or your office setting. You can then send that product back to us. Not only will we give you a new one, but we will attempt to recover the data on there as well.
Oh.
It doesn't get any better.
Now we really have to talk. All right. Sandra, thank you so very, very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to talking with you guys further.
All right. SentrySafe.com. We were talking to Sandra McFarlane, Director of Marketing Communications for the Sentry Group, a local company that's producing a terrific, award-winning product. Thank you very much, Sandra.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Excellent. Excellent stuff.
I mean, that literally is an answer to a lot of problems that people should be concerned with right now, you know, especially because we've been telling them, back it up and put it in a safe place. Well, now they've got the product, and I'm almost wondering, I bet you if you did something like that, you might even get a break on your insurance.
Well, that's a good question.
You know, that's a good point. Thing to bring up with your insurance agent, that if you were to, you know, put all your valuables and everything else, especially business-wise and all that, to have a safe place, put all that stuff.
Yep, that's a great idea. All right, our next caller is Al from Macedon. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
Thanks, guys. I really enjoy listening to you whenever I can. My question is not nearly as technical as what you're used to. Printers.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about that one guy trying to get a parallel set up on his printer.
Right.
And you mentioned laser printers for $99. My experience really is pretty much limited to HP printers. Went to Office Max, and the least expensive unit that I could see was $180 for a laser printer.
Yeah.
Well, what printer?
You can get cheap, but you know, you're going to get what you pay for.
Samsung and Brother have cheaper laser printers in that $100 to $150 range.
Right.
But, yeah, they might not be as durable as an HP brand. We've been playing with Brothers for 2 years now and haven't had any problems with them. They have an all-in-one unit for $199, printer, copier, scanner. They work really well. Generally speaking, they're single-user USB printers. If you want to get a multi-user network printer, that adds a bit to the cost as well.
Right.
But the printer prices are dropping drastically. I remember paying $7,000 for my Apple laser writer. $95, was that? No, $85.
Yep.
The first consumer level laser printer. And before that, they were $50,000. So that was a big drop.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Great. So, Brother, you've had some pretty good success with.
Yeah, Brother, we've had a lot of success with. Samsung's drivers are a little iffy, we found. Samsung's printers are a little cheaper. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
The person just kind of said, oh, you don't want those, and didn't seem to have a lot of real technical reasons why.
Well, Brother's been huge in the fax business forever. You know, almost every fax machine, you know, for the last 20 years has been a Brother. And they're getting into the printer market because it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Take the scanner out and it's a printer.
Right.
Okay. Okay, yep. Great. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you, Al. Our next caller is Ginny from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Your great show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask your opinion about a couple of websites and whether you thought it was a good idea to use them. They are anti-root kits, and one is Grisoft, and the other one is Panda Software.
Grisoft and Panda are both very good companies. In fact, if you go to securitytango.com, which is still up, you will see that thanks to Jerry Seward. Thanks to him, you will find that one of the places that we most recommend is the AVG product, which is from Grisoft.
I like Grisoft better than Panda.
Yeah,
it's just personal.
But both of them are legitimate. Yep. Both of them are good products. We prefer Grisoft. That's just our preference.
What do you feel about the anti-root kits? Are they something good to run on your computer?
It depends. depends on where you get them. I don't know what site you're talking about.
Those two.
Oh, those should be fine.
Okay.
Again, both of those companies are legitimate companies and do very good stuff. So whatever you get from them should not be a problem.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. Ginny raises a terrific point, which is that you will always see links to places that say, oh, you get this pop-up that says, you've got a problem. Click here to fix it. That's probably going to be a virus in and of itself. If you stick with the well-known places like the ones we recommend, you should be all right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Hey!
We should also, well, let me mention quickly, also found HP does have a $100 laser printer as well, the Model 1018. They're usually about $120, $130 with rebates, so they work out to about $100 in the end. But it's, again, it's a single user, maybe one or two people sharing on your home network.
Yeah, you wouldn't want it
for... But laser is just so much more cost-effective than ink. You know, the first time you replace your... ink cartridges in your inkjet printer, you've probably bought a new printer.
Yep.
The cost of replacing the ink is the cost of the printer was to begin with.
Yep. Well, two important Apple announcements here right now. Apple has issued the first update for Leopard, which is its three-week-old operating system. The update fixes a wide range of out-of-the-gate bugs and patches, three security-related design flaws in the revamped firewall. The update to Mac OS 10.5.1 includes changes to a host of Leopard features, including some that have given early adopters fits, such as a gaffe that crippled some software, including Skype, when the firewall was set to the most flexible option. It also tackles problems formatting drives before they can be used with Time Machine. Other non-security fixes address a file copy bug that made a lot of people crazy. It was deleting data. Instead of copying data, it would delete it if the other drive went offline even momentarily, which would often happen if you were trying to copy things over to the net. That's fixed. The reliability of iCal to deliver alarms has been fixed. The mail synchronizing with .Mac has been fixed. A lot of things have been fixed. So if you're a Leopard user, definitely get the update. Now, our own Chris Reich has recently become a Leopard owner, but not yet a Leopard user.
Right. I won the... raffle at the Apple Cider Group meeting last Wednesday. I won a copy of Leopard. Haven't opened it yet. The plastic shrink wrap is still on it because I'm taking the cautious approach and I'm waiting for another couple of updates before I let the dust settle and take the leap myself.
Very nice.
That's a lot of times what we've said. You wait for the 0.1 update to come out and let them fix the first of the problems and wait a couple of weeks to let other people fix the problems.
Right.
The other thing that Apple came out this week with is system 10.4.11. So we go to 11 now.
You're Nigel Tough now.
Yep. In addition to some of the other fixes they put in 10.4.11, they also added Safari 3, which is actually kind of unprecedented for Apple, giving you the new browser without making you buy the new OS.
Very nice
of
them.
So now the new Safari 3 is included in System 10.4.11.
Well, because a lot of people didn't like Safari 2 all that much.
Well, and Safari 2 is pushing 3 years old from when they initially developed it.
Exactly.
And so nice now you don't have to pay for it.
And now speaking of Apple, we should talk about the Apple Cider meeting this coming month, December 12th, 7 p.m. at East High School. This is very important.
Next month.
Yeah, next month.
This is still November.
Yeah, shut up.
We'll mention it a few times until then.
Considering the way I've been this past week, I'd like all of November to go away and just get to December now.
You're doing fine, Nick. Keep going.
Right. There's a special presentation from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children about family internet safety. I think that's going to be an important topic, a very important topic, and it's not just for Mac people. It's how to keep your whole family safe on the internet. That's the Apple Cider meeting, December 12th, 7 p.m. at East High School. So keep that idea in mind. Go to applecider.org, C-I-D-E-R. Francis couldn't care less about that, .org.
Francis can't even be seen now.
I don't think Francis she stopped listening to the show a long time ago, I think. Yeah, so I think we can...
Where is the real friend?
It's one of those emails that I may have kept it somewhere in my 100,000 emails. I should go find it.
Francis,
we should probably send her some sort of gift certificate of some sort. We've been using her name in vain for the past, 4 years now at least, probably six.
She loves us.
She loves us. We know that. Our next caller. We have time for a caller? We do. Look at us.
Whoa.
It's Joe in Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Yeah, see here. Question about, start up my laptop this morning, and it's running extremely slow. Immediately pop up and open the task manager, and the system sees their system idle process, and then there's also the system file, and it's using an incredible amount of CPU. Have no idea why that is. Every time I try to shut it down now, it doesn't want to shut down.
And have you danced the tango?
Not recently.
Is there?
By not recently, he means not within living memory. That hesitation.
I hear kids in the background. They're probably consuming his time.
Yep. Exactly.
Is there a show all processes option in that task manager under Windows?
Yep.
There may be a process from another, either show all or from another user that might give you more detail about what the system is actually doing. There's also a couple of deeper process monitors available. Microsoft has one in their sysinternals page. Actually, we just had the same question last week, which is why I can remember this. But generally speaking, there's something hogging your system, trying to do something. It may be something good, like your antivirus program trying to do an update. Maybe something bad, like a spy program trying to do an update.
Yeah.
Now, when you try to shut down and you say you can't, if you get a message about process is hung or what's the word they use? Can't be, process is stuck, you want to cancel it or wait, something like that. The name of that process will let you know what's hanging in the computer. But so it's usually just detective work trying to figure out which process it is.
I would definitely recommend running the SpyBot NATAware at least. Okay?
Firefox all the time. And last night we left Internet Explorer out because we're trying to do photo books on publishing site, and we left Internet Explorer open. I don't know if that meant anything, but now it just won't shut down.
Another one to try also that I recommended, and you can give it a shot, is Super Anti Spyware.
Okay.
Try downloading that one and running that.
Okay.
And leaving IE open could have been the problem because there are so many known holes through IE.
Yeah.
There's also holes in Swiss cheese.
There's also the fact that he's running an HP printer, and if he's got the HP software on there.
That's running in the background, too. Yeah, constantly checking.
Actually, I don't run an HP printer off this one. So.
Oh, okay. There you go. All right.
So anyway, one other question. It was topical to the top of the hour. I always back up my pictures and things like that, and I burn them onto quality DVDs and put them in my safety deposit box in case of a fire. Would they be secure in there?
No, because
of the heat.
They won't be able to withstand the heat.
Well, and a lot of times you got to watch out that too when you buy a fire safe if you buy one yourself.
Right, exactly.
They are fire resistant for papers.
Okay.
Which Fahrenheit 451.
Right.
Your hard drives melt a lot cooler than that. So you
that's the point behind the Sentry
right,
safe.
The Sentry safe. You need a data proof or data ready fire safe.
Okay. Very good, then.
Well, safe deposit box at the bank is probably paper fire resistant, but I don't know about data fire resistant.
Oh, I used to work in a bank. Oh, yeah. Heck, yeah. You may not have heard about it. Doesn't mean they don't happen.
Right. Well, yeah, it isn't explosion in a safe deposit box.
You might
want to
look into one of those
break into safety deposit boxes.
I say for the peace of mind, and you might want to check with your insurance company because they might also give you a break, too.
Right.
You know, protecting all your valuables and everything else.
Right. Check SentrySafe.com. All right. Our next caller, Mike on a cell phone. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi. I have a XP-based wireless network in the house. It's worked very well for 2 years. And now I erred, and I went out and bought a new laptop that's based on Vista.
Our sympathy.
I'm so sorry.
Well, yeah, that's what I've run into. I figured out how to make them talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten that far, but now that I've run, when I try and with the Vista machine, if it prints at all, it takes 10 to 15 minutes just to talk to the printer.
Yeah, because it's doing its security check.
Well, that's what I thought, too, but it doesn't seem to be a firewall or a security problem. I can't figure out what it is. I can send the item I want to print to the other machine and print it that way.
How much memory is in this Vista machine?
In the Vista machine is 1 gig, and in the Vista machine is 2 gigs.
No, you said Vista machine twice.
Oh, I'm sorry. The XP machine is 1 gig. The Vista machine is 2 gigs.
And who's got the printer?
The 1 gig.
And how much disk space is left on that printer?
On the printer?
On the computer.
on the computer. On both of them, I would say one has probably 40 gigs left, and the other one probably has 120 gigs left.
All right.
Good there.
What may well be happening is a handshake problem.
Okay.
I actually have that problem recently after an update. I've got an old Windows 2000, I know, server, it's behind my firewall, that does my printing. And after a recent set of updates, it takes forever to start printing something from any machine. And it's because the handshaking has changed on the print spooler.
And okay. Did you get the updated drivers for Vista to print to that printer?
Yes.
Right, because the other part of the problem is if, you were only going to an XP machine, so never mind, that wouldn't be a problem. But yeah, it's an interesting problem. It seems to have come from the last update from Microsoft. And I don't know, it doesn't seem to have hit everybody, but the people it hit them hard. I mean, it takes a minute to print things sometimes.
Well, one of the things, you just mentioned it's an HP printer. One of the issues we have with HP printers is that they load their HP manager software and maintain a constant two-way communication between the computer and printer, saying, so the printer can tell the computer I'm out of paper or whatnot.
Right.
And when you try to use that as a network printer, then that communication has to go through your network, too. And that can sometimes slow down the networking.
Well, it worked great when I was using just XP. Now that I've gone to XP and Vista, I mean, you have to go in initially and change Vista calls the network work group and XP system as home. So once you're past that hurdle...
That's because 98 called it work group and XP changed it to MS Home.
Well, no, no, you hit on the right thing, though, Steve. This is the other issue. See, the thing that is like Steve said, HP is trying to do its thing, saying, hey, you got anything for me to print? And it's constantly checking the network. So it's doing its sort of security and checking. Now you get Vista in there, and it also wants to get in there and say, wait a minute. This request that let me know that the network is safe. Is this viable? So it's got to do a lot of checking, too, within itself to make sure that, because Vista protects itself,
it's
something else that's not trying to attack the machine.
Did you load the full HP driver on the Vista machine?
Yes.
You might want to uninstall that and just load the printing only.
Well, just let it find the network driver.
There will be no network driver on XP because it can't publish the Vista driver. But don't load the entire HP suite. Yeah. Just load the printing only driver.
Okay.
And that may cut down on the network overhead and may make it work better.
All right, we'll give it a shot.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That's usually the 30 meg download versus the 200 meg download from HP.
Yeah, right.
And 1 hour load versus.
Yeah.
Right. Our next caller is Dan from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
I feel like this is so insignificant listening to that last conversation.
We take them all, Dan. It's all good.
iPod, iTunes. I get an M4P file. Can I convert that to an MP3 so I can utilize? I mean, I pay for the song.
Where did you? Oh, that's your problem. You've paid for the song. That's
the opinions of Steve Ray are not the opinions of Soundbites, Wham, or any right-thinking human.
That's where the problem is coming from. Since you bought the song from the iTunes store, it's in a protected format.
Okay.
So it protects it. You can load it into other iTunes computers if you authorize them to your iTunes account, or you can load it onto your iPod. In order to convert it to another format, you have to burn it to an audio CD first. And that strips, I don't know if I should be saying this, everyone knows.
You probably shouldn't.
That'll strip the protection and convert it to an AIF, and then you can import that AIF back into the computer as anything else.
Well, what about a flash drive? A 4 gig, like, flash drive?
What about it?
If I load stuff on this, can I bring it to a friend?
That is illegal. No, you can't do that.
Okay. I didn't know. It's so crazy now.
Well, you can load. Well, that has always been illegal. You cannot buy a CD and give a copy to someone else. Apple is just enforcing the law a little bit stronger than we would like.
Right, and we can't help you circumvent that law.
So
otherwise, we're accessories over the air. Not a good idea.
Right. Now, if you wanted,
I don't mean to do it that way, but I'm trying to figure out an easier way also to save some of the stuff.
Well, you can copy the file onto anything you want, but you have to authorize your iTunes account to play back that protected file.
Oh, okay.
So if you do give that song to a friend, you'll have to authorize his computer to your iTunes account.
Yeah, but you can't do that because he didn't buy the song.
No,
you can't do it legally. No, you can't.
True. You can authorize
him. You might be able to authorize him, but not legally, because legally he did not buy the song.
Unless this gentleman has an account on his friend's computer.
Right. If it's on the same computer, apparently, that's
gray. Then by part of the license agreement, you're only allowed to activate 5 computers.
It was so easy when we just had a needle and a tape.
Right, that was still illegal, though.
Yeah, it was easier. It was just illegal. Yeah, it's easier now. We're not going to tell you how easy it is.
Was that illegal back in the...
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
The law has not changed.
Right. You did not create it. You cannot make a copy. You cannot distribute it.
The big difference is they didn't...
You didn't have record players in your car. You had tape decks.
No, the difference was the reproduced quality was so low, nobody cared. By the time you got to the second, even third, or even second generation, it was just so bad that nobody cared if you copied it, because if somebody really wanted it, they'd go out and buy it. Okay. But now the second, third, fifth, billionth copy is identical to the first one because it's all digital.
Right.
Now they're starting to crack down on it, but it was never legal to share music with anybody.
And there's a fight in the law now between the Copyright Act that allows you to make a legal backup copy of your stuff for your own purposes.
Right.
And the DMCA, which prevents you from breaking copy protection in order to back up your stuff.
Right.
You're allowed to make a legal backup of your DVDs that you have. Is that correct?
Yes. However, in order to make a backup copy of the DVD, you have to break the MPEG protection, which is illegal.
Yeah. If it didn't have MPEG protection, you could do it legally. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. We are not lawyers, nor do we play them on television or the radio anymore. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, as I knew would happen, we've started this storm on the IRC channel.
About copying music.
Right. Chat.efnet.org, EFNET.org, and go to the Pound Soundbites channel, which is kind of, they're pounding on it right now, about copyrighted material, and everybody's got their own. Look, folks, the reality is whoever creates the copyright gets to decide what gets done with that material. I don't really care what you think. Adults all know that you follow the law or you're breaking the law. And I don't care if you break the law. I'm not your mother and I don't really care what you do. I'm just telling you what the law says. So what? You know,
that's like,
they're all yelling at me like, well, what do you mean this? Yes, I mean that. That's the way it works. Get over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a copyright owner myself, I make money off of the material I copyright. When I write something for my website or a magazine or a newspaper or whatever, they pay me for that. That is how I feed my family. It would seriously pork me off to find out you're stealing food from my family. That's as simple as I can make it to you.
That's always the interesting joke that we run across, especially on peer-to-peer networks where unknown bands put their music up on the peer-to-peer networks. And as soon as they get known and get a record deal signed and a contract, then they don't want you sharing their songs.
For example, and I'll be very honest about this, I caught a guy reproducing every question and answer I put out on my website, on his website, under his name. All my copyrighted material, he would just change my name to his name and reproduce everything, and he was charging people for it.
Get out.
I'm very grateful to that man. He paid off my car.
Cool.
After the lawyer's fees and everything else, he bought my car, and God bless him. Wow. So nice. Feel free to steal my stuff. I need a new car.
Hey.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
That stuff pays for the food I put on my family's table.
Yeah.
Do not try to take it away from me. I will meet you in court, and I will win. It's that simple.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is John on a cell phone. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a problem with my desktop computer. It's a Presario.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I boot it up, I get a message that I'm low on memory.
Okay.
And then it says to click this little balloon, and I click it, and it goes to three places that it says I could conserve on memory, and it says, of course, I get zero savings, and if I click that, it all goes away. just annoying. It doesn't do anything. I've got plenty of memory in it.
How much disk space do you have?
How much memory and how much disk space do you have?
Well, I have a gigabyte of memory, and I have, I think, 3 gigs of, or 20 gigs of hard drive.
Yeah, 20 gigs free?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm only using like 2% of it when I look at the system chart.
All right. When you see this message, have you already started up Windows? Is it already in Windows?
It comes on in the startup cycle.
Okay.
Like when I just start the computer up in the morning, that's the first message I get.
I bet it's the 640K. Too many things are in low memory.
It's possible. What version of Windows are you running?
The
XP?
XP, yeah.
You might want to check, in the startup bar. If you go to start.
Did you upgrade this from an old, like, Windows ME or Windows?
No.
All right, here's what you can do. Just to see if this helps alleviate some of the issues.
Yeah.
Go to start, go to run, type in msconfig.
Okay.
Hit enter. It will bring up this menu, or this little window, and you can touch on the startup bar.
All right.
There is going to be listed all the things that are starting up. Now, if you have, say, like, if you installed Acrobat Reader, that'll try to load. Zip files or anything else, stuff that you know that you can see down in the system tray that's starting up that you really don't need, like printers and that type of stuff that are starting up. But some of the others, real time, likes to put itself in the tray. So uncheck those, reboot, and see if you get some of those that low memory issue to go away.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Real quick, just before we go back to the show, everybody's completely having a coronary on the chat about copyright and fair use and all the other things they don't actually know anything about, but they're perfectly willing to give you their unregistered, unqualified opinion on. I should tell you, however, that in the District of Columbia, George Washington University got a billion of these John Doe things from the RIAA saying you have to turn all the records over so we can find out who's stealing our songs. And George Washington University said, no. So the RIA took them to court, and the court is saying, well, this is nonsense. You got to show just cause. We have laws in this country, a few left here and there, and one of them says you have to show just cause. You can't just ask them to turn over every record for everything. So show us what the just cause is, and we'll do this. The RIA doesn't quite know what to do at this point. So we'll see where that takes us, but right now it looks like America is winning against the RIAA. We'll see where that takes us in the future. All right, I think we've got time for another call or two. Jerry from Irondequoit. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. I just got a printer question. It's nothing as esoteric or whatever as some of this copyright issues. I got an HP printer, one of the 1200 series, maybe 4 years ago.
Sure, I have one. I like it.
How about that? What do you do when you get smudges on your printout? Now, what you do... See, I don't have a bench like you guys do. You know how you throw stuff up on the bench and you start working on it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm one of those other people. I kind of rely on all you techie guys, and God bless you all.
There are two reasons you get smudges. One is there's something actually wrong in the printer.
Right.
After 3 years, you just put two behind its left ear and leave it dumped in an alley somewhere. But what it may be is that at some point when you changed the cartridge, you got a little bit of toner in it.
Right.
If you wipe it out carefully or blow it out, maybe, but I'd rather wipe than wipe it
well,
out.
Well, that's an individual preference, and not that there's anything wrong with
it. Yeah, if you fold or wad, you know.
Right. I see. I knew this is where it was going to go.
No, I don't want to go there.
Good.
So what am I going to do next? Now, I do all that stuff, and it doesn't work.
Well, sometimes
so wipe the very, very, very carefully. There's a heater element coil in your
Corona wires. One of the things that they might want to try is HP sells it, and I think Staple does too, is some cleaning sheets that you can run through them.
I want to take it someplace. You see, I'm one of these people.
Well, yeah,
that says,
then fine.
Where do I take it? Who does HP service?
Try ABC Electronics.
They're in East Rochester. Or there's JP Computer Products in, it's between Henrietta and Pittsford. They're at the corner of Jefferson and Clover.
Yeah, I know ABC Electronics used to do it. It's right off, as you get off the East Rochester.
No, they moved. They're on Dispatch Drive now.
Oh, been a while since I've been there.
Yeah, so in East Rochester, there's West Commercial Street, and then 253 heads north toward Penfield. The Wendy's on the corner there. The next street up is Dispatch Drive.
Oh, that's where Leo's Bakery is.
Is it?
Or the bakery. There's a bakery there.
We're in Rochester now, Dave. I don't know.
East Rochester. Yeah, in East Rochester.
In East Rochester.
There's
you're
a
right.
Bakery.
It's Leo's.
Leo's Bakery. I've been in there.
It is.
Good.
Yep. So there are a couple of places to clean printers, but you run into the same problem where since a new laser printer is $100, a new inkjet printer is $30, the cost of repair is usually more than the
cost
of
replacing it. Yeah, but you got to compare quality, too.
Right.
I mean, your $100 printer.
But Nick was on the right track. If you clean the corona wires very carefully, because you don't want to break any of them.
If you break them, then you're really going to just throw the printer away.
And sometimes it depends on if the smudge is repeating down the paper. The distance between repeats will let you know whether it's the OPC drum and you just put a new cartridge in, or if it's the fuser roller and you may have to replace the fuser.
Right.
But eventually your fusers will wear out. If you can open the back cover of the printer and see the orange fuser, you can sometimes see that it's basically just a rubber roller that heats up to 600 or 700 degrees.
Yep.
So the rubber gets brittle and will start flaking off. So there's things you can do for that. And there's a website called fixyourownprinter.com that has a lot of these suggestions and tips too. Yeah, when laser printers were thousands of dollars, you wouldn't mind spending $100 to fix it.
Yeah, right. All right, we are mercifully done for another week. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. I want to thank everyone who called in. It's been great. I want to thank everybody who kept us both amused and informed on the FNET chat. We'll probably do that again from now on as opposed to doing our own chat site. I want to thank Chris Reich, who has, again, ably given us the benefit of his expertise, donated his time. Right, we have nowhere to put them at the moment, but we'll get that fixed as well. We will fix the website as soon as possible. We will be working on it diligently this week, getting access to the machine and everything else. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. We'll see you next week. Thanks.